I'd like you to turn to Genesis chapter 39, please. Genesis chapter 39. I want to speak this morning about living above the circumstances. Genesis chapter 39. Probably my two favorite characters in the Bible are Joshua and Joseph. And it's, I'd like to preach on both of these men, tremendous examples to us. But here in chapter 39, we'll begin reading in verse 1, Genesis 39, verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass, from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within, and she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. As you look at the life of Joseph, it was both blessed and cursed. Especially the early part of his life was cursed. He was the next to the youngest in a large dysfunctional family. He had one younger brother. He had 11 older stepbrothers and one stepsister. And he was his father's favorite, which certainly that created some resentment. Not Joseph's fault. Then he had a dream which God revealed to him that all his family was going to bow down to him. And that didn't go over well either. That just furthered the resentment that he was experiencing. His brothers plotted to kill him. They had it all figured out. They threw him in this pit. But one of the brothers, had some remorse about that idea and said, no, let's not do that. So instead, some Ishmaelites came along, sold him into slavery, and they carried him down to Egypt, as we just read about here in chapter 39. He made the best of the circumstances that he found himself in. He became a trusted servant to this man Potiphar, to the point where Potiphar just turned his entire estate over to Joseph. Says he didn't even know anything about what was going on in his estate. Joseph handled everything. He says, the only thing that Potiphar has kept from me is his wife. And that was fine with Joseph. But so he gained great favor with Potiphar, but he also was favored by Potiphar's wife. He refused her repeated advances. Finally, she took an opportunity that arose when nobody else was in the palace at that time and grabbed him and tried to force herself upon him. His response was to flee immediately, even leaving his coat behind. This obviously angered her and probably insulted her as well, the fact that he would refuse her favors. And so she plotted against him and falsely accused him to Potiphar. Look at verse 19 of this chapter. And it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. So she lies about what took place and accuses Joseph of having assaulted her. It says his wrath is kindled. Verse 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. Now, just think about something for a moment. Back in these days, Joseph is a servant. Very well favored, responsible for increasing this man's estate tremendously, and very trusted by Potiphar. What do you think would normally happen in a situation like this where a servant was accused of rape? Why didn't Potiphar have him killed? I don't think he's angry with Joseph. I think he knows his wife. I think he's angry with her. And that's why he wasn't executed. But he still, the accusation's been made, he's put into prison. Gets into prison, and what happens? He just puts his head down. He does his job. He counts on God to get him through this thing as well. From being disfavored by his brothers, sold into slavery, taken down to Egypt, away from home, away from everything else, rises to a position of power within Potiphar's house. This woman has designs for him, falsely accuses him. Now he's in prison, but he just puts his head down and goes to work. And the result, he gains the favor of the keeper of the prison, who puts him in charge. He's in control in the prison, even though he's a prisoner. So he's there, and he works away and put in charge there. And while he's there, two other men are brought in, the butler and the baker of Pharaoh. They're imprisoned with Joseph under his care. And one morning he comes in and he sees they're both kind of troubled about something. And so he says, what's the problem? Why are you so sad, fellas? And they said, well, we had a dream, but we don't understand what it means. We have no interpreter. And so once again, God explains to Joseph what the dream is. And for the first one, he says, well, here's your dream. You're going to be restored to your place as butler before Pharaoh within 3 days. And sure enough, that's what happened. But when he told him the dream, he says, when you get there, remember me before Pharaoh, that I might be delivered from this place. Mention me to Pharaoh. 2 years pass. Joseph stays in prison. Nothing changes for Joseph, other than the fact that he's still in charge down there. Then Pharaoh has a dream. And He's troubled because he doesn't understand it either. And nobody in his kingdom is revealing to him what this dream means, what's going on. And what it was about, as it was revealed to Joseph, there was going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And at this point, the butler remembers, oh, there was a guy that revealed a dream to me, and I was supposed to make mention of him to Pharaoh. Even though it's been 2 years, he finally makes right, tells Pharaoh. Pharaoh calls Joseph in. He reveals to him the dream, what's going on. And just to kind of expedite through the story here, Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge. He's in complete control of the entire country of Egypt at this point. As he was in Pharaoh's house, or at Potiphar's house, he has now become in the country of Egypt. Pharaoh just turns it all over to him. And he says, what should I do about this thing? This famine that's coming. And Joseph told him, he says, well, just go ahead and reap the crops and gather the things in the barn and be ready for the 7 years of famine. And so that's the process that takes place. And then, of course, we know that the brothers finally came down to Egypt, and this whole thing was prepared by God to preserve the people of Israel, because the famine was affecting the entire world, at least that part of the world at that time. And they ended up coming down there because they'd heard there was corn in Egypt, and they were spared by that thing. And it was all God working, putting Joseph in a position that he could minister to his family and preserve them. That's the story, but the thing I want to focus on this morning is, how was Joseph able to overcome all this adversity in his life? 13 years have passed since he was sold into slavery. Now he's ruler in Egypt. It's been a rough journey. He suffered a lot. But he was never a victim of his circumstance. Someone has said that in life, it's 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react. There's going to be tough things that happen in your lives. There's going to be some difficulties. There's going to be some unpleasant things. There's going to be some really hard things. You don't have any control over that. What you have control of is how you respond to the circumstance. What do you do in the circumstance? Joseph remained committed to doing right and doing his best. Look back at chapter 39 again. It says, verse 8, he refused and said unto the master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house. And he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He kept focused upon what was right and pleasing to God and what was before him to do. He learned it's better to be looking to God, following him through the circumstance, than to seek him because of the circumstance. He wasn't reacting. He was committed before the circumstance developed. And it didn't change his outlook or perspective on anything. So first I want you to see this. He trusted in the presence of God in his life. Look at verse 1 again, Genesis 39, verse 1. Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master of the Egyptians. Being sold into slavery is not a very good thing, is it? But God used that and put him in the service of a prosperous man who was attentive to what was going on in Joseph's life. He grew, he responded, he prospered there. This was a source of comfort to Joseph. Knowing that God was with him. That one thing was the only thing that he had to sustain him through this. The Lord was with him. And Christian, that's what we've got. The promise that God is never going to leave us nor forsake us. It doesn't matter what you're going to face. It doesn't matter what trial you're going through or will go through. It doesn't matter what heartache or tragedy or whatever. God's with you. And God's in control of the situation. Nothing ever surprises God. Nothing ever catches him off guard. He knows the end from the beginning. Look at Isaiah chapter 41. Keep your finger here in Genesis. Isaiah chapter 41. Isaiah 41:10. Obviously, this is much later in Israel's history. The Babylon or the Assyrian captivity is approaching for the northern kingdom of Israel. He says this in Isaiah 41, verse 10. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. I mean, right there, that alone should be an encouragement. God's with you. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of thy righteousness. Go back to Joshua. Joshua chapter 1. Joshua has taken the leadership of the people of Israel after Moses' death. He's about to lead them into the land of promise, that which they have been looking for years, promised hundreds of years before to Abraham. But now they're finally going to see the fruition of that promise. That land that Abraham had walked in and God had told him was his, now his descendants are finally going to enter into that promised land. And as he comes down to verse 9 in Joshua chapter 1, says this, this is God speaking to Joshua. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. The two things that really draw Joseph's and Joshua's attention to me are this. You go through and you know, Paul had his thing, his problems. His failings, and Peter, he was always putting his foot in his mouth or messing something up. And you go, David, the man after God's own heart, but he messed up pretty bad. And so many of these other characters, godly, you know, I'm not trying to discredit them, but that's what they are. That's what we all are. But you know what? Joshua and Joseph stand head and shoulders above everybody else. It's hard to find anything wrong with either of these two men. Joshua, he's leading the people of Israel into the promised land. And he's got this assurance from God that I'm with you whithersoever thou goest. That confidence that we have that God is never going to leave us nor forsake us. In Exodus, as God is calling Moses, and he meets, he's in the backside of the wilderness for 40 years with his father-in-law tending to his sheep before he came and started his ministry to try to pull the people of Israel out of Egypt. He comes to that burning bush. And God says, take off your shoes, Moses. This place is holy. And then God tells Moses, you're going to go before Pharaoh, and you're going to tell him to let my people go. And Moses' response is, well, who are you? Who do I tell him is telling me to let him go? God said, tell him I am. Tell him I am has sent thee. He didn't say I was. We must not live in the past, folks. Lamenting, regretting, making excuses. God did not say, I am to be. It's not about the future. And the thing that Joseph did as he was going through these awful experiences in his life was he focused upon what was before him to do. Not the awful things that his brothers had done to him or Potiphar's wife had done to him, but the God that he was serving, that promised to be with him, the I am. It's not about the future. It's not about the past. It's present tense. I am is with you. God is always present with each and every one of us. If you're his child, if you're saved this morning, just as he was with Moses and Joseph and Joshua and David and Daniel, all throughout the Bible, you see these different ones that they trusted in the I am, the ever-present one. Now, in this present moment, right now, God is with you. Don't forget that. And tomorrow, whatever you might be facing, God is with you. Always there, always present. Don't allow the circumstance to block your view of God. Joseph had that knowledge that God was present with him. Second is this. Joseph trusted in the purpose of God. Look at Genesis 45. This moves us back into the story later, as the brothers are coming down to Egypt to get some food and so forth. Genesis chapter 45, start in verse 4. Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. So they've been going back and forth. They've been meeting together. He sent them back home again and told them to come back down. And then he sent them back again and says, I want my younger brother. Of course, they didn't know it was his brother at the time. I want your younger brother to come with you, Benjamin. And that was a problem because Jacob didn't want to let him go because he'd lost Joseph and he was afraid of losing Benjamin. But they finally go through all that. And finally now they're down there and now he's revealing himself to them for who he is. I'm your brother. I'm the one that sold you into slavery. So, Elias, where are you at? How would you treat your brothers, were you Joseph? Probably not like Joseph did, would you? There'd probably be some desire to get even. But not for Joseph. He says, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now, he's not covering up what they did. Verse 5, now therefore, be not grieved. nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. Whew. Joseph sits there and says, it's been rough, but God had a purpose. God was doing something, preparing me to be able to preserve my family, my brothers, who haven't treated me so well. My dad, who was responsible for some of the rough times that I had. But God did it to preserve life. Verse 6, for these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and that there are 5 years in which there will neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity of the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. He says, look at this. There's no way I could have done this. I couldn't have worked this out. God's hand was through the whole thing for a specific purpose to accomplish this in your lives. Look at chapter 50. Chapter 50 and verse 15. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. You see, these guys are looking at it from their perspective. If I were in Joseph's shoes, this is how I would respond. He's just been holding back as long as Dad was alive. Now Dad's dead. Now he can get his vengeance. That's their perception of things, out of the evil of their heart. They're projecting onto Joseph how they would respond. Look down at verse 19 of chapter 50. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you thought evil against me. But God meant it for good, and to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. Not a malicious thought or motive in his life. Just, hey, I resigned this thing to God, and he brought this all to pass for a purpose. I gladly suffered what I suffered because of what's going to result of that thing. What a source of confidence that gave him. To know that this is God's will. This is God's purpose. This is what God is accomplishing. 1 Thessalonians 5:18 says, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. Look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And verse 20. Giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's not always easy. I wish I could tell you that I've arrived, but I haven't. But that's what we ought to do. to recognize God's hand and purpose in whatever is going in our life, going on in our lives, to do things to the best of our ability with due diligence. That rather than wanting to change the circumstance, we need to focus upon what purpose God has in that circumstance, what he has for us and through it, what he's teaching us, what he wants us to learn, what he's preparing us for, how we might be used to reach somebody else as a result of that circumstance, or how God can be glorified in it. We won't take the time to go there, but you go to Acts chapter 16, and you read about Paul and Silas. Now, Paul was that missionary. He'd ventured out on his own in chapter 16, took Silas with him after he and Barnabas had a falling out in chapter 15. And he got a vision of a man calling them to come over to Macedonia and help those people. So it's clear to God, to Paul, that God wanted him to go to Philippi. They go to that city, they begin to preach, and people are getting saved, and it's not long, and others are getting upset. Paul and Silas end up being arrested and beaten and thrown in prison. There they are, after having been beaten for preaching the gospel. They've done nothing wrong, just like Joseph. And it says, at midnight, Paul and Silas began to pray and sing praises to God. In everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. And in spite of their adverse circumstances, they were above them. And their focus, God's got something to do. And the end result was there was an earthquake. It busted them out of that prison. But they didn't leave. They just sat tight. And the keeper of the prison came, and he was ready to kill himself, because once, if the prisoners escape, he's going to get killed anyway, because they're his responsibility. And Paul says, hold it. We're all here. Nobody's gone. Don't kill yourself. And you know what the result was? That prison guard and his family got saved. See, they weren't under the circumstances. They were above them. What do we do in the adverse circumstances? Do you seek what God's purpose is in it? And finally, this. He trusted in the provision of God. Look at Psalm 34. Psalm chapter 34. Psalm 34 and verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. You know, there's some verses that aren't always that comforting. I don't want afflictions, God. That's all right. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. God uses them in our lives for a purpose. Trust in what God provides. That comfort, the assurance he's with us, and that he has a purpose in the afflictions. What's going on in your life right now? We're coming to that special day each year. I hate the fact that people call it Turkey Day. It's Thanksgiving. It's the one religious holiday a year that's recognized by the whole populace, pagan and Christian alike. Think about that. It's really a religious holiday. I know that not everybody observes it as such, but that's what it is. Being thankful. You think about the founding of this country and all that the founders went through. and coming over here on those three ships and half of them dying before they arrived, or over the first winter as they came here, and about starving to death even after that. And the Indians, they made some friends with them, and they helped them and showed them how to plant some crops and survive, and they had that big feast to celebrate, to give thanks. And you read the stories of those pilgrims. They gave thanks to God, not only for how he preserved them in coming here, but preserved them through here. And you look at the course of our nation and the things that have taken place, God's been a part of all of it. Truly a time when we should give thanks to God. So don't forget to do that. And don't call it Turkey Day. Thanksgiving. Because we ought to give thanks in all things. Amen? Let's stand, please, for prayer. Father, help us.